available in more homes than the Pac-12 Network, we are the Podcast of Champions. Fight! I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online.
And here he goes, Miles Jack.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com.
Liner going to try to sneak it ahead. Touchdown, SC!
We are the Podcast of Champions. Welcome back, everybody, to the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the Scout.com 247 CBS Sports Network.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com, the USC site on the Scout 247 CBSI Sports Network. We got to change how we do that, but we are the Podcast of Champions. And yeah, we're coming at you taped, talking about the Pac-12 Conference of Champions. This is our little podcast. We've been doing it for years. We're going to recap everything that happened in week three. We're going to preview week four. If you want to get a hold of us, you can tweet us. We like to tweet at Pac-12 Podcast. You can email us, Pac-12Podcast@gmail.com, or our website, Pac-12Podcast.com. We have all of our shows, previous shows. You can find all that stuff up there. And if you want to leave us a voicemail, you can do that too. 641-715-3900, extension 734-972. Leave us a voicemail. Dave, we haven't had one in a while.
I feel like we've spent more time in our years of doing this. God, when you said that, that was like an existential thing. But I think we've spent more time in our years doing this saying that we haven't had a voicemail in a while than we've had actually spent, you know, getting voicemails. Like, I think we got voicemails for maybe like the first 6 weeks we were doing this and really haven't gotten one since.
We need to switch. Okay, so when I switched my my USC podcast, the Peristyle podcast, I switched it over to a Google Voice number where you can text it and stuff. And I've just been too lazy to just kind of switch this one over, because this one you have to put an extension in and all that stuff.
And frankly, just be honest with the people out there. It doesn't matter as much to you. It just doesn't.
It does. Well, you know, we get paid so much.
Listener, you don't matter to Ryan. All right.
We get paid so much for this one, Dave. You know,
I know. We get paid so much money.
Or zero.
So many real dollars coming to us from this.
So, okay. So a couple of things right off the top. One, Dave crushed the picks.
Oh,
I got
just
crushed.
God, I am a golden god. It's incredible. It's like the first week that's ever happened.
We've never had like this big of a discrepancy. Like, I beat you last year or whatever, but it was like, yeah, by a one or two here or there. Never like this bad. Like, you were 9-2. I was 4-7. It was like awful.
Yeah. Yeah. I had the feel this week. And I think, you know, we've talked about this offline, but we didn't make those picks on air. We made those picks 5 days later, like on a Thursday. And, gotta say that probably played a role, because like my picks like going into the week probably would have been a little bit different because the lines changed a little bit. So it's a great week for me. Great week for me. Not so good for you.
No, no. So Dave would rather do picks offline from now on. I would like, no, unless we're talking about it, I don't want to have these picks count, because we have to do it on the podcast. That's the whole point.
No, no, I don't want to do them off the podcast. I think this show works better when my predictions are comically bad, like at all times. And so if taking them offline means my predictions are actually good, I think we're doing it wrong then.
And there was a couple that were like, so we both missed the Arizona State Texas Tech game. That was a half a point. Mm-hmm. We lost that one by. That would have been another one good for you. And then the like stupid Washington Fresno State one. That was one we had different, and it was one point.
I got
point.
That one by a point.
Yeah. It was a 33-point spread, and, like, it was, you know, 32. So
and it was on, like, some late meaningless field goal for Fresno State, too. We'll talk about that in a little bit, but it was so much fun.
So backdoor cover there. Okay, so we'll – yeah, so picks, we'll make sure we do them on the podcast from now on. We have an updated rankings. I told Dave right when we were taping, I just got an email from the Pac-12 for the Players of the Week. I don't think we've mentioned this before on the show. We've done it in years past, but so we'll just do it real quick. Luke Falk got the offensive player of the week for the Pac-12. They won 52-23. He was 37 of 49, so that's over 75%. 396 yards and six touchdowns, so that's pretty good.
Yeah, that's right.
Devontae Downs, he's a senior linebacker for Cal, won defensive player of the week. So he had 14 tackles, two sacks, three tackles for loss. He had an interception in the 27-16 win over Ole Miss. So that's
all right.
That's pretty good. And then Dante Pettis, the senior receiver punt returner for Washington. So he tied an NCAA record with his punt return. He had a 77-yard punt return for a touchdown. So that's he's the third player in NCAA history to return a punt in three consecutive games. So that's kind of cool that he did that.
Awesome.
Yeah. So those are the Pac-12 players of the week.
Go guys.
Yeah. We'll have some questions at the end, but should we jump right into our
Pac-12 roundup?
Oh yeah, baby.
Yeah. I guess once I play the sound, we don't have a choice, right? We just have to do it.
Basically, we're dictated by, your musical drops.
If I play the drop, we have to freaking do it because I don't know
exactly
what are we going to do here. Okay. So we are starting at the bottom as usual. No change in the basement of the Pac-12 power rankings or the Podcast of Champions power rankings. We still have
Oregon State Beavers.
Oh, certainly no change this week. We'll talk a little bit more about this game when we get up in the rankings a little bit now that Pac-12 play has started. But Oregon State lost to number 21, Washington State, 52-23. This is one that I think we both got right, and it went pretty much as expected, and we'll talk a little bit more about that. Oregon State is off this week, mercifully. Off this week, taking a bye as they try to collect themselves heading into the meat of conference play. They're in very bad shape. We went through this a little bit last week, but it bears repeating. There is not a obvious win on this schedule. Before the season, we might have said that trio of Cal, Arizona, ASU, we were thinking there's even a chance of two or three in there that they might win. Now I see none of those as even games where they would be favored. I don't think they'll be favored by, against ASU at home. And that's the only one that would even make sense. I think they're losing out.
Eesh, that does, not good for the Beavs. Yeah, they have a bye. So that's nice. You kind of lick your wounds a little bit.
They're going to beat the hell out of bye.
Beat the bye. So the offense is pretty bad, Dave. They had one play, explosive play over 25 yards. That was a Ryan Nall, our buddy, Ryan Nall. So the offense just has been sputtering. Not very good. Jake Luton got hurt. So you got Daryl, Gerritsen. He's going to be taking over. I don't know how long. Do you know much about the injury or did you hear much about it?
I haven't read much yet, and I know they have been pretty secretive about injuries in the past. It looks like, this was actually just came out. He was diagnosed with a thoracic spine fracture. So that's obviously very, very serious, and that'll keep him out for some time. Very scary in the game. He had to be essentially stretchered off the field on the cart, whole deal. So obviously we hope he's okay.
Yeah.
They're diagnosing it as week to week. But that seems kind of like a football-y thing. When I see thoracic spine fracture, I think, I think that's very serious, but I'm not a doctor. I don't know if that's like something fairly minor, but when I see spine fracture, I'm a little leery of saying that it would be classified as week to week. So hopefully he's okay. But yeah, it doesn't sound like I can't imagine he's going to be playing after the bye week. That's for sure.
No, I wouldn't think so. And this is, it's not like the NFL. He's not like getting paid. Like this is, he's in college.
No. You just had something that involved, spine and fracture being referred, those terms being used around you. Maybe just sit out a few weeks.
Yeah.
Just sit out for a little while. Okay.
But yeah, so the not good. Job by the Oregon State offense. It started off actually okay. I think first four drives for Washington State, they end up getting like a safety and punted a couple of times. But after that, Luke Falk just threw all over him for his six touchdowns that we mentioned at the top. I think Oregon State won the like rushing yardage. It was from 155 to 60. So there's something there.
Hey,
but
look, that's something they can build on.
Yeah, but Falk is now, he has 98 career touchdowns. He passed Jared Goff for the fourth most in Pac-12 history. This was just like a, there was a few little glitches, I guess, for Washington State, but they were in command this whole game.
Yeah, it was early on probably a little bit slow. I think through the first quarter, it was like a 7-2. It was something awful. Like, it was one of those things where you're flipping around and you see the score and you're like, ugh. It was like 7-2, I think, at like nearly the end of the first. It might have been the end of the second quarter. And then Washington State just started to pull away. And once it got into essentially the third quarter, it just started to become a little bit of a boat race. It was like a little touch and go for a while. I wasn't sure if they were going to cover the full 21 or whatever it was, but then they did. I still don't quite. I think Washington State is obviously probably better than I had anticipated. Not even like better, but I think they're just, you know, a little bit better than a lot of the competition they're going to be going against. So I think they're going to be in, you know, pretty good position in conference. But I still don't quite know what to make of them because Oregon State isn't great. Boise State, which is, you know, one of the good teams they've played, easily could have beaten them at home. So I think the jury's still out, but this was exactly what they needed to do against Oregon State.
One thing I forgot, since it was a Pac-12 game, we also have to say who they played.
Washington State Cougars.
But we won't reveal where they are ranked until we get up to them. And that's and we'll do the game. So the recaps we'll do at the lower seeded team in the power rankings, and the previews would be in the higher seeded team. Is that how we're doing that?
That sounds great. That sounds like a great ad hoc solution that we're making on the fly.
I thought that's what we used to do before, but I don't know.
I can't remember. I don't have a memory anymore. I have two children.
That's fair enough. I have paint fumes. We're painting in our house, so I have paint fumes.
Yeah, so neither of us is possessing a memory.
Okay, so not good stuff for the Beavers. The best part is that they have a bye week and they can kind of maybe try to figure stuff out. But like Dave says, I don't see another win there. All right, so let's move on to our number 11 team.
Arizona State Sun Devils.
All right, so this game was really, really interesting because for a while there, it looked like ASU was going to just get smoked out of town. We're down at one point. Let me get the exact score right. I believe it was 35-17. Yeah, at one point down 35-17, just at the end of the first half, looked like Texas Tech was just going to run away with it. And then ASU came storming back. And if you're looking for encouragement, first, ASU lost. I'm not gonna do like spoiler alert here. Texas Tech won 52-45. Notably, ASU did beat the spread. Texas Tech was favored by 7.5, so there you go.
We lost it by half a point, man.
We lost it by half a point, so we're not happy with ASU. but they did come storming back. I think there was some encouragement you can take from that. I think there was some real encouragement you can take from the offensive play. This is probably one of ASU's better running performances in many a moon. Kalen Ballage put it together a little bit. DeMario Richard was out there and doing some good things. Manny Wilkins ran the ball effectively, and they also kind of worked it in some receiver stuff. N'Keal Harry had a carry, and they kind of mixed and matched to get a running game going. And Manny Wilkins, I thought, was really sharp throwing the ball. It's just their defense just can't stop anybody for long stretches of time. Though it is noticeable that they did shut down Texas Tech relatively in the second half, only give up 17 points after giving up 35 in the first half. I think they'd given up 5 passing touchdowns in the first half. They only gave up 1 in the second half. Now, obviously, Texas Tech was running the ball a little bit more in the second half, but still some positive takeaways. It wasn't the shellacking that I think I was anticipating going into this one. I think the picks column I write, I was predicting like a 17-20 point win for Texas Tech. So it wasn't that. This was tied late. So I think there's a lot of encouragement ASU can take from this. I don't think there is in anywhere near as hopeless a situation as, say, in Oregon State. But definitely some positive signs on the offensive end.
Yeah, so the positive signs for ASU, that's just bad signs for Oregon State because it looks like this team looks like it's close, right? Like they did. So even right before the half, they give up a block punt, you know, and the score becomes 35-17. instead of 28-17, you know, going into halftime. There's little things like that. Yeah, I thought Wilkins did play well. They end up having to switch centers because they're having snapping problems. There's just a lot of like little, like detailed stuff that like, you know, you, someone misses a block, you end up giving up. Like there's stuff that like is fixable, which probably doesn't reflect well on Todd Graham and how they're coaching this team up, but you feel like it can be close, Dave, you know, and it was kind of weird at the beginning too. I think it was delayed like an hour for a thunderstorm. In this game, like I was trying to watch it on my iPad when I was in the press box and it hadn't started yet. Like weather delay, and I kept checking in to see what was going on, but it just seemed like it's there, which could probably be frustrating for Arizona State fans. You're like, man, we should not be this bad. You look this bad, but fix a few small things and you're winning some of these games.
Yeah. And I think it's weird how Arizona State kind of, parallels. I mean, I go to the school I'm most familiar with, but kind of parallels UCLA's situation is that the defense, I don't know if it's like super fixable. Like I think the defense kind of is what it is, but if they can kind of hone some things offensively, I think they can be a team that's going to give a lot of other teams trouble. Like I think they can be a team that's going to have a lot of volatility. Like they can get into shootouts with a lot of different teams. And I think Manny Wilkins is good enough, and has that dual threat capability enough that, yeah, they could do some stupid things this year, and you know, they're 1-2 right now. I think they're kind of behind the eight ball in terms of trying to get to a bowl, but I don't think it's completely out of the realm of the possibility at this point. I mean, it's not an easy stretch at all. And if you asked me to bet money on it, I'd probably still go. They'll start the year 1-7, probably. But like, they've got some volatility. If you told me, you know, five games from now that, wow, they beat, Oregon and Stanford. Oh, okay. I mean, it wouldn't be like a total shocker. I don't think they're going to. I think they're going to lose to both teams. I think they're going to lose to each of the next five teams. But I think there's at least some chance based off what they've shown offensively so far.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about the schedule last week, and it's a freaking brutal stretch.
Oh, it's
you know,
a brutal slog. It's
Oregon, yeah, Oregon at Stanford. They have a bye week. Washington at Utah, which is always tough. USC, Colorado at UCLA. I mean, but the way they're playing, I agree with you. I think they're going to have a puncher's chance in some of those and be able to, if you play well, beat some of those teams or beat a couple of those teams, you know, but you could see them losing the whole stretch, you know, the whole everybody, but I think they can, if they can keep, you know, their head above water and not get down on themselves and, you know, fix some of the silly little mistakes that were happening, you know, they can do that, but I don't know. I'm not sure if they will.
Yeah, and it's not going to be an easy start to it this weekend. We'll get into a preview a little bit more for this game, but just to give you a heads up in case you stop listening at this point, ASU is taking on number 24 Oregon at home at 7 p.m. on Saturday, and Oregon is favored by 14.5, and we'll get to our picks when we talk about Oregon.
Okay, so let's see. We'll go to our number 10 team.
Arizona Wildcats.
All right, so Arizona played on Friday night, and the Wildcats really just kind of beat the pee out of UTEP, sort of as expected. They were favored by a whole bunch of points. They covered it by a whole bunch more. Somebody picked this game wrong. I can't remember who.
That was me.
That's right. Ryan picked something called UTEP over Arizona, a known team. And Arizona won this by 47 points, and they were favored by far fewer than that. God, how many takeaways can you actually have from this one? Brandon Dawkins ran the ball over them, threw the ball over them, did whatever he wanted to do offensively. Arizona did whatever it wanted to do offensively, ran for 326 yards, threw the ball very well, and their defense, you know, their defense has looked pretty decent so far.
Yeah.
Unexpectedly decent. So, I think a lot of positive stuff to take away from this one for Arizona.
Yeah, I did. I mean, it was like 23 point spread. I thought going on the road Friday night and, Arizona played well. They bounced back from that loss to Houston. It looked a lot like the Northern Arizona game that they played, but this was on the road, a better team and they still, you know, UTEP's got problems. They got a lot more problems than I thought they had. Watching this team, they couldn't tackle anybody. Like they looked, it was like they could not tackle. Nick Wilson was just crushing dudes, running them over. Dawkins had a huge night, like you said. And it was funny. Rich Rod was super animated on the sidelines, especially early on. If you watched him, he, you know, you don't really know how much, you know, were they going to look ahead to the game against Utah? Like, were they like, but man, they took this one seriously. They put everything they had into this. It wasn't like a team that they were overlooking at all. And UTEP, I don't know if they thought their game was supposed to be Saturday, and it's like everyone, like, their alarms went off, you know, like, you were late for your exam or something. Like, oh, crap, we got a game. It was like something like that. But they were ready. I mean, Rich Rod had the guys ready. He was fired up. He got his team fired up to play at UTEP. So hats off to Rich Rod, and they just bulldozed him.
Yeah, and, you know, it's interesting because – so they're 2-1 now. I think before the year we would have picked them to be 2-1 because probably would have picked them to lose to Houston. I think we did. But before the season, I wasn't thinking this was a potential bowl team at all. But the way they've played, the way some other teams have played, I think there's – you know, in the same way that ASU gets into a really tough stretch now, you know, Arizona, they've got Utah at home, and that's a tough one, but we'll talk about that in a little bit. The spread on that indicates that Arizona could win. At Colorado, I don't know. UCLA at home, that's a winnable game. I don't think they're going to go 6-6. I don't think they're going to get that sixth win, but I wouldn't be, like, completely shocked at this point. Their defense has looked a lot better than I expected. They've given up 24 points to NAU, which, whatever. Houston, they gave up 19 points, and UTEP, they gave up 16, and they're not giving up huge chunks of yardage either. It's not like, you know, teams are, you know, getting 500 yards but only scoring a little on them. They're matching the score with what they're giving up on the ground and through the air. So, you know, the defense might have figured some things out since last year. Maybe.
Yeah. I mean, we got to see him play
a real opponent, but yeah,
a real offense. You know, we'll find out. Like, I think a lot more on that's a big game, Friday yeah. night, you know, hosting Utah, but yeah, we'll see. Rich Rod got him fired up and, they played well. So thanks, Rich. You screwed my pick. Okay.
In case you stop listening right here, Arizona's taking on Utah at 7:30 on Friday night on FS1. Utah's favored by 3.5.
Utah's favored.
At 3.5.
Wow. Okay. What was the, what did you say the spread was for, the Arizona State Oregon game too?
Oregon is favored by 14.5.
Wow. That's pretty good. Okay. We'll get to those stuff when we do our picks. I'm just curious. I wasn't even thinking about the spread there. Let's see. Our number 9 team, we're going to go to Los Angeles.
UCLA Bruins.
Oh, so UCLA fell quite a bit in the Pac-12 power rankings this week. The Bruins lost to Memphis on the road on Saturday. Really fun game to watch. Memphis won 48-45. This was really back and forth kind of the entire way. I think there were like 6 or 7 different lead changes. But it was ultimately the test of which defense is going to get a stop before the other one. And ultimately Memphis got a couple more. And UCLA's defense was just really unable to stop Memphis's offense for long stretches, especially in the second half. You know, I think people are going to watch that game and say, you know, the defense was really bad. And, you know, Josh Rosen threw a couple of, pretty bad picks, and that's all true. What I fixated on after the game was some really poor clock management to end the first half. UCLA was down, let me get it just right so I'm not screwing this up. So UCLA was down 20-17, and they got the ball with about 3 minutes to go. Drove down the field using a tempo offense, made a ton of sense. The tempo was working really, really well for them. And then they get down to about the 1-inch line with 1:26 to go, and it's 2nd and inches to the goal. And they go hurry up again, run the ball in with 26 seconds left on the play clock. Clock is running. They could have easily run it down to under a minute. And with the way the defense was playing and giving up big plays, you know, it probably made more sense to try to make that the last possession of the half, especially since Memphis was coming out with the ball in the second half. So they do that. They run tempo. And then on the ensuing possession for Memphis, UCLA gets a sack on first down and then calls timeout. But the thing is, they only have two timeouts. So no matter what, Memphis is probably going to run that clock down to at least 10 seconds left, even if they just let it run, before they'll have to punt it away. But instead, Memphis then goes down the field in two chunk plays, scores a touchdown, and then comes out in the second half, scores another touchdown. So essentially, UCLA in about 2 minutes of game time, 3 minutes of game time, went from up 24-20 to down 34-24, largely because of just bad management of the clock. And in that kind of game where it's, you know, I keep making this analogy, but it's like a tennis match, you know, it's who's going to break serve first, who's going to break serve first, getting that two score lead. At any point is kind of a big deal. And UCLA kind of through just a simple clock management error allowed Memphis to get that initiative.
It was a weird one, you know, and it just kind of was in waves where like early on you're like, oh, UCLA looks good. And then Memphis would come back and, it kind of just went back and forth. You know, we knew it could be kind of weird with the 9 a.m. start, but the way it started off, I thought, you know, UCLA, okay, there's not an issue there. I don't know if that was a big factor. But, you know, certainly that's never easy to do. UCLA did use a 3-4 defensive look. Am I right on that? It looked like they switched things up a little bit.
Yeah, they had a bunch of injuries, which was part of it. They had to do some different things personnel-wise to make it work because they were down some linebackers, down a couple of defensive linemen, down a safety. So they had to change some things up. So they went to sort of a 3-4, call it a 5-2, whatever you want to do. Yeah, it was a change up on the defensive front. They've been a 4-3 team for most of the last year and a half.
Yeah. They also did like a single file, like huddle sort of thing. Did you see that? I don't know what that was.
At the beginning of the game?
Yeah, it was like early on where like they all lined up like in the biggest I formation ever.
It might be an allusion to how they used to break the huddle back in like the Red Sanders days. but I don't know what that is. They do a lot of interesting things. They do a little dance before kickoffs. There's a lot of strange things.
But we got this one wrong. And this is one of those ones where I think if we were in person or, you know, together, I would have just picked opposite you. But I had no idea that Memphis had a tight end named Joey Magnifico. Because if I would have known that.
Yeah, I didn't really know that until I was writing the preview. And obviously that should have weighed more on my pick, because clearly nobody with Magnifico is going to lose that game.
No. I mean, he caught like the first touchdown for Memphis or something too. And I was like, oh crap.
Yeah.
They got a guy named Joey Magnifico.
Exactly. Exactly. So yeah, it was a fun game to watch. I drove out to Memphis for it. It was humid as hell. But it was great. A lot of fun games. It was just a really fun game to watch, and I think UCLA is going to play a lot of really fun games because they have no defense and plenty of offense, so there's going to be a whole lot of shootouts on the schedule. Whether this week ends up being a shootout is anyone's guess, and we'll talk about it a little bit more when we get to Stanford, but UCLA is taking on Stanford at 7:30 on Saturday on ESPN. It's at Stanford, and Stanford is currently favored by 7.5. This opened at Stanford -9.5 or 10. And it's since moved down to Stanford -7.5.
Well, it's interesting. So when we were talking about our power rankings, I kind of felt Stanford should drop lower, and Dave was pretty adamant, no, keep them where they are. But because of the schedule this week, we're going to talk about number 8.
Stanford Cardinal.
These two teams play each other, so that'll decide who's going to be ranked ahead of her. But let's talk about the Cardinal now.
Oh boy. Oh boy, Stanford. What did you do? Stanford was so bad they shut the lights out on them on Saturday in Qualcomm. San Diego State beat them 20-17. Stanford right now. So, okay, a lot of people are going to take from the last two games that Stanford is just bad. They're just bad. They're not. Their offense is really sputtering right now, but they're not a bad team. San Diego State and USC are both good teams, and sometimes when you play good teams on the road, you lose. Stanford, I don't think, is bad, but they've got to figure some things out really quick on the offensive side of the ball, especially in the passing game. Keller Christ has gone bye-bye. I mean, he was so much better last year than he's playing right now this year. I don't know if it's a confidence issue or what, but, he was 9 of 20 for 72 total yards, And in total, Stanford threw for 80 yards against San Diego State. And San Diego State has a good defense, but they don't have that good of a defense. Keller Curtis basically iced the game with an interception late. But Stanford ran the ball fine, like perfectly fine. Bryce Love was 13 carries for 184 yards and a couple of touchdowns. That's fine. That's great, even. That's just good, good, good running. Somehow, in this football game, they only had, am I reading this right? They only had 43 plays, offensive plays?
I believe you're right, yes.
My God. And it wasn't like it was that slow of a tempo game. San Diego State had 78. That is just, Stanford can't win like that.
No.
They need to be grinding out drives more and more. But Bryce Love's a special player. They did a lot of nice things. It was really Chris, two picks. And he also lost a fumble. Like, if he doesn't turn those three balls over, Stanford probably wins this game. It's probably a tight game. It's probably no fun for anybody to play, but they probably win this game. But yeah, this was an ugly loss for Stanford, ugly loss for the Pac-12. Doesn't bode well for Stanford actually competing in the North this year, though that all remains to be seen. And Stanford is a notoriously slow starter to seasons, but yeah, not good.
No, they're not playing like Stanford plays, and they're doing things that the opponents of Stanford would normally do. Now, we've seen Stanford win games when their quarterback is like 8 of 19 or something, you know, but 8 of 19, 56 yards, two picks and a fumble, like you said. If you're running for 350 yards on the other side, okay, that's one thing. But this, you know, it was bad. I think, yeah, San Diego State had 20 minutes or over 20 minutes of time of possession in the first half. So Stanford only had 10 minutes in the first half. That's why you get so few plays. But they're doing silly stuff like, they ran into the punter to extend a drive that San Diego State ended up scoring on. You know, like stupid stuff like that where you're supposed to get the ball back. That dumb mistake, and now it turns into points for the opposition. And this is one of those things where there was a lot of opportunities to win this game, and they kind of, you know, blew them all. There was just a lot of different ways they could have won this game. Now, I think San Diego State played well. Our buddy Kyle Bonagoro, I think we have to mention him by contract in every one of our Pac-12 podcasts I do. I forget where he had San Diego State in their Pac-12 power rankings, but they're 2-0 against the conference so far. So they'd be pretty high up there, I would think. But this is a bad loss for Stanford. Bad loss for David Shaw. Slow starters. I'm wavering, Dave. Like, I was really a believer in the beginning and felt like that game against USC, they did some good things, but, you know, Qualcomm's a dump, but still, you got to play better than that. We've seen Pac-12 teams play like crap down there, but this was crap.
Yeah, just utter and complete crap. Offensively, they're crap right now. Defensively, they're better, but they're... So defensively, I do want to shout this out. Their defensive line was not good at all against USC, and it wasn't great in this one, but they generated a hell of a pass rush. They had six sacks against San Diego State. I'm mostly doing that so UCLA fans know why I'm picking a Stanford win in a few seconds. But they had six sacks of San Diego State. They defended the run. I mean, so San Diego State rushed the ball a ton, 49 times, but they only got 166 yards from it. So that's a pretty good yards per play number. So it could have been a lot worse if the defensive line had played anywhere near as bad as it did against USC. And obviously, San Diego State's offensive line is nowhere near as good as USC's, but still, some positive takeaways. I don't think this means Stanford's season's over. I don't think it means Stanford's not going to win, you know, a good 8 or 9 games. But I do think it takes the potential for Stanford to win the Pac-12. It's still on the table, but I think maybe starting to set the expectations a little bit lower for this team makes the most sense.
So the game between UCLA and Stanford are number 8 and number 9 teams playing each other.
Yeah. So this one is, just to reiterate again, we got to figure out a better way to do this. Just to say it again, UCLA taking on Stanford, 7:30 p.m. on ESPN in Stanford. Stanford's favored by 7.5. So just to give people some backstory who don't pay attention to this series, UCLA hasn't won in a very long time. The last time they won was 2008, Rick Neuheisel's first year at UCLA, and Jim Harbaugh's, I think, second year at Stanford. So been a minute. UCLA has gotten pretty much exclusively beaten the crap out of by Stanford. That's not good grammar, but I'm going to roll with it. In the Jim Mora era, they had one close Pac-12 championship game in 2012, but aside from that, Stanford has pretty much owned this matchup. You know, looking at this game, it's going to be a test of, you know, my brother put it, the stoppable force versus the movable object. You know, Stanford's bad offense versus UCLA's very bad defense. And which is worse? And is UCLA's offense against Stanford's good defense enough to compensate for whatever Stanford's bad offense is going to be able to do against UCLA's bad defense? I think UCLA's, I think these teams are actually pretty evenly matched. Not in terms of like the quality of the teams at all, but like UCLA has a good but flawed side of the ball, their offense, and Stanford has a pretty good but flawed side of the ball, their defense. And then their other sides of the ball are just god awful. But I think UCLA's defense has shown a propensity for making other offenses look pretty good already this year. And Stanford, it's not as if they haven't played well offensively at least once. I mean, against Rice, they looked fine and great offensively. And yeah, it was against Rice, but they've at least shown they can do it. UCLA's defense hasn't really shown anything this year. So I'm reluctant to pick UCLA, given all of that, given the history. 7.5 feels like a lot just because Stanford's offense hasn't done great things. I wish this line was 6.5. But even at 7.5, I'll take Stanford.
Wow. Yeah. The 7.5 is a lot for me. If it was, I would think about it a lot more. The fact that it's over a touchdown, I'm going to take UCLA. I just think there's at least a puncher's shot for Josh Rosen to keep it close. Or, you know, if they don't, you know, I could see UCLA winning by a couple of touchdowns if they play great. You know, I'm not sure. We don't really know with Stanford. They're going back home. It's not like that's some great home field advantage. It's just basically you don't have a rowdy crowd around you, like, you know, cheering at you when you're on offense. But I still feel like Stanford can win the North, but it's hard for me to keep picking them seeing the way that they're playing. So I've been wrong with them the last 2 weeks. I know Rosen can sling it. I know Stanford's got a great secondary. He might throw a couple picks, but I think he'll keep them in it, you know, and even if, you know, fall short at the very end and you lose a game by a field goal or something, I think the 7.5 is enough for me to go and, you know, move towards the UCLA side. So I'm going to pick the Bruins in this one.
Well, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to look up the last time Stanford lost 3 in a row. Because, yeah, it was the end of the 2008 season. They last lost 3 in a row.
Just like yesterday. It's like almost happens all the time. Yeah.
Yeah. So nearly 10 years ago was the last time they lost 3 in a row. So
you're saying there's a chance?
Yeah. Well, UCLA hasn't often lost back-to-backs in the Jim Mora era. Wait, is that true? Probably not. I kind of don't think UCLA is going to win this one. Now, I wouldn't be stunned because the offense has a ton of volatility to it, kind of like what we talked about with ASU a little bit, where Josh Rosen can get him in a shootout basically any game because he's just that good. But I don't think this defense can win them a shootout. And I think Stanford's defense, I would trust a lot more, even with their obvious issues offensively. I think they're going to be able to run the ball just straight at UCLA. I would bet on Bryce Love eclipsing 200 yards in this game. Like, you want to give me that prop bet? I would probably bet it. But yeah, I think they'll control this game and pull away.
All right. Well, we'll see what happens. We're getting into Pac-12 play, which is fun. All right. Let's move up to our number 7 team, Dave. We have
Colorado Buffalo.
All right. With all the other good games on, I watched precisely none of this game. Colorado actually kind of struggled a little bit against Northern Colorado. I don't know if struggle is the right word. They didn't beat them the way you kind of thought they should. Northern Colorado is a pretty talentless FCS school, and they were able to score a little bit against Colorado. They were able to throw the ball a bit against Colorado. The Buffs ended up winning 41-21. There was no line on this game, so it didn't matter.
Yeah.
Our purposes. But you know, they did what they should do against an FCS school offensively. Steven Montez, 4 touchdowns, bunch of yards passing. They ran the ball for 212, but, kind of just ho-hum. I mean, did what you needed to do. It wasn't in doubt at any point, but still, probably could have beaten them a little bit worse.
Yeah. This was an ugly, like, if you talk to like Colorado people, they thought it was an ugly win. It's kind of one of those things where, you know, looked pretty good week one. The defense was good. The defense gave up a little bit more against Northern Colorado than you would probably like. The offense, you know, stretching out a little bit, enough 41 points. Obviously, it's not a great opponent, but they're still trying to get that, you know, everything to where they want it with Steven Montez and all of that. Little ugly. You kind of get the feeling, though, Dave, that they'll play better against better competition, but we haven't seen anything that's like, oh yeah, this is a really great Colorado team. You know, the 3-0. Now you're heading into, you know, a tougher stretch of games. I just don't feel like I learned a lot from watching Colorado in the first few games. I thought I knew, you know, from watching the Colorado State game, but then everything kind of got weird after that. We'll see, you know, maybe they get things rolling. Maybe they're kind of playing to the level of the competition. I get the feeling about that a little bit. But I think this third tune-up game was a little uglier than, like, Buff fans would like it to have been.
Yeah, and their schedule was set up weird because it was like it devolved. It's like they start with Colorado State, which is the toughest opponent in their non-con. Then they get Texas State, which is their second toughest, but a fair bit short of Colorado State. And then they get this, you know, garbage team. And I think it's just they're probably ready for real games.
Yeah. But they give up 21 points to the garbage team and like 6 points previous to both.
Yeah,
teams
but that could mean so many different things. That could just mean like they're ready for a real opponent because they didn't give a crap about this game. I think here's the positive for me. Their offense seemed to be getting it together at the end of Texas State, and then their offense looked pretty darn good against Northern Colorado. Their defense already looked pretty good to start the year, and you know if the defensive players are a little lax and a little unfocused. Yeah, you can give up 21 points to some garbage team. That happens. I feel relatively confident about their defense, and I think their offense is starting to click a little bit. We're going to see, obviously, but I just don't know how much you can take away from a game like that. And so we're going to preview their game in the next little segment, but just to give you a little heads up, it's at 7 p.m. on Saturday in Boulder. Number 7, Washington, coming to town. The Huskies are a 10-point road favorite.
Yeah, interesting. Okay. So we'll talk about them when we get to the Huskies up in the power rankings. This would be our – where are we at? We're number 7 now, right? Is that where?
Mm-hmm.
Number six. Okay. So Colorado is number 7. We're kind of grouping the mountain teams together for some reason. So the Colorado is number 7. Number 6 would be
– Utah Utes.
All right, and now I'm going to give our classic disclaimer here that pretty much 3 through 6, you could rearrange these in any order you want. Utah, we've got number 6. I think in my initial version I had them number 5, but we moved some things around just because we do that. Utah looked great against San Jose State. I watched a good bit of this second half. Tyler Huntley is so good. So much fun to watch really early on in his career. He's going to be really, really good. I don't think it would be a huge stretch to say that he projects to be, you know, better than any quarterback that Utah's had in quite some time, better than Travis Wilson. I think he's got that potential. Really good arm, really good athlete, does it all. And I thought he was stellar in this game. Making great decisions with the ball. He had one interception, but he, you know, made some great throws, and just kind of took it to San Jose State late. I was watching this game really closely because it looked like, for a while there, Utah wasn't going to cover, and I really wanted them to. And so I watched the second half very, very closely, and, he didn't let me down. And Utah's defense didn't let me down. You know, the first half, they were a little leaky against San Jose State, but then in the second half, they really dialed it up. Didn't allow the Spartans much at all, and basically shut him down. I thought it was a really nice performance. I guess the one big question you have for Utah at this point is whether or not they're going to be able to run the ball consistently outside of Tyler Huntley. They haven't really gotten a great answer there yet so far. He's been, I think, their leading rusher in a couple of games so far. So that's something to figure out. But for the most part, I thought this was a really, really solid win. I think Utah's, like, every single friggin' year is quietly one of the top four teams in the Pac-12. I think they're gonna compete pretty hard in the South this year.
Yeah, they look good. Huntley, so, you know, we're kind of questioning him getting the nod over Troy Williams, but he's proved to be a stud and you know, a playmaker at quarterback, not a guy that's just running their system and is just trying not to make mistakes. He's someone that can make things happen. He was 30 of 43 for 341 yards, four touchdowns, and the one pick that Dave mentioned, and he did lead the team with 53 yards rushing. I think that's one of the concerns, that they can't really get the running backs rolling. I believe it's a new offensive line scheme. So maybe there's some issues just kind of getting things down and with the blocking and stuff. But I think that, you know, that's a potential issue once you start getting into conference play. But the run defense was great, Dave. They held San Jose State to 30 carries, 37 yards. So pretty darn good. You average about a yard a carry. It's San Jose State, but still, they got the cover. It was a really big win. I think they can get there. You know, they got to go on the road. We'll talk about it in a minute to Arizona on a Friday night, but you feel like this Utah team can kind of get some momentum with the non-conference schedule. The good win was at BYU, I guess you could say. It wasn't a great slate, you know, similar to what we were talking about Colorado, but you did, you know, took care of what you needed to take care of. You kind of found your young quarterback that can be a stud, and it sets, you know, Kyle Whittingham up to make a run in the South. You know, USC's looked beatable at times, so it's not like it's just this runaway race that we all kind of thought it was. If Utah ends up playing well and gets better as the season goes on, I think they got to fix the running game, but this can be a team that could win the South.
Well, and whenever you're talking about teams that basically in college football, when you have a guy who's a good dual threat at quarterback, it's a game changer. And it means that, you know, the teams that have beaten Alabama over the years, not to say that Utah's ever going to be matched up with Alabama this year, but like the teams that have beaten Alabama over the years, generally they have some kind of dual threat quarterback who can make things happen with his legs, because it is such an equalizer in college football. It does kind of, it doesn't like level the playing field exactly, but it gives you that potential to outplay a team that's a lot more talented than you. So basically what I'm saying is, yeah, I think that UCLA or Utah USC game, I'm like adopting Utah as my team right now, because I'm like trying to say UCLA. Utah USC game on October 14th, that's one you kind of circle now, because that's going to be an interesting game, because I think Utah has shown quite a bit through the first three games. So it's Arizona this week. Utah is traveling to Tucson. This is at 7:30 on Friday night, so it's a back-to-back Friday night for Arizona. They played last Friday. Utah is now 23 in the nation. This is on Fox Sports 1, and Utah is only favored by 3.5, which seems like combination of people of Vegas giving Arizona a lot of respect for, you know, I think reasonably their defense looking pretty good so far, and their offense seemingly clicking a little bit, and probably a little bit of disrespect of what Utah's done so far. That seems like a little bit of a disrespect for, I think, how good Utah's looked so far. I'm going to hammer Utah on this one. I think they're going to win this by 14 points. I've liked a lot more of what I've seen of them than I have of Arizona. I think Arizona is a little bit more one-dimensional offensively, and I think Utah can do some pretty good things defensively against them, and I don't really see Arizona stopping Utah the way they've kind of handled a little bit of what they've seen offensively from three teams that aren't very good offensively. I think Utah is better offensively than any team they've played so far, including Houston, and I think Huntley's a more dynamic threat than any quarterback they've faced so far. So give me Utah. I'd probably take them 34-24, something like that, 34-20.
Yeah, 100% agree. I think this is where when we were putting up the better numbers last year, these are the kind of games where you're like, that line doesn't seem right. Now, Vegas knows what they're doing most of the time, but, you know, when we watch all of these games, and they start playing each other, it's not that you're always right, but you just kind of get a feel like, yeah, I think Arizona's, you know, done some good things. I think there's some potential there, but this Utah team is probably better than we thought. I think they're a lot better than 3.5 points over Arizona. I'd same thing. Like if this was up to 7.5 or whatever, I would still take, Utah. Like, you know, above that, I would probably have to think about a little bit more, but, I could see them winning by 10 or so in this one. Even, you know, it's a short week. So that's part of it. It's on the road. That's part of it. You know, Arizona, it's not short for them because they played last Friday, but Utah, you know, they played Saturday. So, you know, that's little parts of it, but I just get the feeling, Dave, that Utah is going to be ready for this one and play really well.
Yep, completely agree.
All right, let's move on. Our number five team, maybe the biggest jump. It's definitely the biggest jump this week.
California Golden Bears.
Yeah, because pick the I don't know, 15 or 20 teams who have two better wins than Cal right now.
Right.
Ole Miss at home, and UNC hasn't turned out to be very good, but still winning that game on the road at 9 a.m., that's a good win. So Cal beat Ole Miss 27-16. I think anybody who was expecting real like Pac-12 after dark fireworks in this one were probably disappointed because Cal's defense came to play in a major way in the second half. They were harassing Shea Patterson. I don't think Shea Patterson has ever looked this bad playing quarterback. He threw three picks, and it could have been more. Cal was after him in that entire second half. This is another one I was watching very closely to make sure that Mississippi didn't come back because they were favored by 4, and I wanted Cal to at least cover the 4. Shea Patterson, they made him look bad. They were attacking on defense. I love the way they're playing defensively. Now, yeah, they're going to give up some big plays because they're just attacking and attacking and attacking. But they're making so many negative plays. They're just causing so much havoc. It's just been a lot of fun to watch Cal so far this year defensively. And offensively, they got enough done. A lot of what we were expecting of this Cal team, that they'd be some offensive, you know, they'd be able to do a lot of things offensively, but really struggle defensively. Not been flipped on its head entirely because the offense has been fine. But the defense coming to play makes it, I mean, this is an obvious bowl team now. It's an obvious team that's going to be a real trouble spot for a lot of teams on the schedule. Yeah, they had the hiccup against Weber State, but this was an impressive, impressive win. And I think if you're a Bears fan, you got to be at least a little excited for the Justin Wilcox era at this point because he hired a very good staff that's already paying dividends. When you have this kind of offensive production against an SEC team, and then you also combine that with this kind of defensive production against, you know, Shea Patterson, who might be one of the most talented quarterbacks in the nation, that's just great. A lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, did not expect this one. And I kind of went against my gut because I like Tim DeRuiter a lot. And you weren't really sure what to expect because Justin Wilcox's defense are more of the read, react. Like, they're a little more passive. They're not as aggressive as what we saw in this game. So, you know, maybe that's some of the veteran leadership from the assistant coaches and coordinators that he's brought in. That they kind of added that wrinkle. They gave up some big plays. I think 270-yard touchdowns in the first half, but they didn't give up any points in the second half. Only 131 yards, for Ole Miss. And, these SEC teams don't travel across the country very often. You don't always lose when you do, but, you know, it adds a whole nother dimension to the game when you travel multiple time zones. So, we saw Cal do it against North Carolina, like Dave said, and to get that win is good. You know, we saw UCLA do it against Memphis and lose a close one, but it adds another dimension. It's not the confines of home. It's not taking a bus to some FCS school that's an hour away that you can just pummel. You got to go play a team that has Division I dudes, you know, and sometimes they're good. Sometimes they're not that good. Cal has turned things around and Ole Miss kind of found out about that. So it was a little bit of a blow to the SEC, a nice feather in the cap for the Pac-12 to get a win against the SEC, and Cal certainly better than we thought going in. They got 5 sacks in the game. Like Dave said, they were harassing Shea Patterson, who I think he's an amazing quarterback, but they made him look pretty average. He just wasn't comfortable. And, they had some big plays early on, but after that, you know, Cal just shut him down. And that's pretty, you know, you're a Cal fan. You got to feel pretty good. Like, you know, things were not looking good. Didn't look like it was a great roster. Brand new coach has never head coached before. And now you're like, hey, things are looking up. Things are pretty good.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. And they shut down the run too, which is such a big deal. And then we'll talk about this game in a little bit, but Cal takes on USC at home, number 5 USC at 12:30 p.m. on Saturday on ABC in Berkeley. USC is currently favored by 16.5.
16.5.
Yeah, so we'll talk that in a second. We'll talk that in a second.
Yeah, we won't get to that one. Okay, so let's we got our top 4. Now we're going to move up to number 4. We have
Washington State Cougars.
All right, so we recapped.
Well, I'm sorry. That number 4 is not the Washington State Cougars. I am very sorry. Number 4 is the
Oregon Ducks.
Oh, you're terrible.
I'm terrible.
Terrible at this. Awful.
When my picks are 4 and 7, I'm just all over the place, you know.
Oregon beat Wyoming on the road by so many points. So many more points than you thought.
Yes.
49-13. They were favored by 2 touchdowns in this one. Ryan picked Wyoming for who knows what reason. I didn't. I picked the right team, and they won by a lot. Oregon kind of did exactly what it did last week against Nebraska, except it didn't give up a bunch of points in the second half. They raced out to a 42-10 first half lead, didn't relinquish it, ran the ball all over this Wyoming team. This wasn't even a great Justin Herbert day, but Royce Freeman was just crushing it. Benoit was great. Just across the board, they ran the ball well. Averaged about 5 yards a carry, but they ran the ball 65 times. 95 total plays. Looks like Oregon of old, actually. Defensively, they were – I mean, if you're looking for positive signs, you probably expected the offense to be pretty darn good. But defensively, I mean, they've been I'm trying to remember a game where they've played this well against an actual FBS opponent that people thought was going to be good, because they held them to 66 yards passing, which is just stunning given how bad the pass defense was a year ago, and 117 yards on the ground.
Wow.
This was just an incredible defensive performance, and I think that's got to be the most encouraging sign for Oregon fans and probably the Oregon coaching staff, is just how shockingly decent the defense looked. And after last week, you know, what was a disappointing second half defensively, putting this together this week, I think, spells potential good things for Oregon going forward.
Yeah. I kind of thought a similar thing would happen, but I felt on the road, and I know, you know, Josh Allen's an NFL caliber quarterback, but he's been fairly garbage this year, which is kind of surprising. But I mean, it was just, Oregon just jumped out so quickly. They just they beat the spread. I mean, they just did it so early on. It wasn't going to be like it was a 21-point halftime lead that would erode away a little bit. Like, that's kind of what I thought would happen. They were up 42-10 at the half. So it was a different feel for it. The fact that they were able to do that on the road, you know, great job by Willie Taggart and his squad. They had a, you know, a bit of a second half collapse, but not the same way that they did against Nebraska, where the, you know, this huge lead got cut down to 7 points. So I was just kind of a little gun shy after seeing, you know, picking them to cover against Nebraska, and then they blew that big one. So some of it was just like a vindictive pick, because I was like, screw them, I'm not picking them because they blew it last week. But they, yeah, they came to play. Josh Allen was 9 of 24 passing, no touchdowns. I think he had 66 yards, something like that. So it was Jim Levitt's doing a great job, I think, up there so far. If this is an Oregon team that's fun on offense and doesn't suck on defense, and not only doesn't suck but is good on defense, like, they're going to be dangerous.
Yeah, I think you put them in contender category now. Not for like a national championship or anything, but for the North, I think they're there. Because the schedule also sets up decently well for them to kind of get ahead of steam, too. And let's just start talking about that now. Oregon, we just talked about Arizona State. They go on the road to take on ASU at 7 p.m. on Saturday. Oregon's favored by 14.5. Give me the Ducks there for, like, basically the same reasons as I've taken them, like, the last couple weeks. I think I took them against Nebraska, maybe. But whatever, I think they're just going to be be able to do whatever they want offensively to Arizona State, and with their defense looking credible, I don't think this line is high enough. I think ASU, yeah, they showed some things against Texas Tech. They showed some comeback ability for sure, but I think Oregon's offense is a better version of I don't think it's a better version of. I just think it's better than Texas Tech's. And I think their defense is potentially better as well. So give me Oregon here.
Yeah, me too. It's I'm trying to think of what I'd go up to. 14.5, it makes me a little nervous, but it's just hard to go against the way that defense is playing. Now maybe they, you know, maybe they collapse again in the second half. They jump out to a big lead or something. Who knows? I mean, they've been good at that. Jumping out to a big lead. I'm not sure if Arizona State, if you get up on them big, if they're going to be able to mount some sort of comeback. We'll see. I don't know. I mean, just the mentality there is a little, it might be a little fragile just with, you know, the way the season's been going so far. But yeah, I like Oregon to cover this one too. So I'll agree with you on that one.
Yeah.
So this is the third time we get to play this sound.
Washington State Cougars.
But they are number 3 in our power rankings, not number 4. And I apologize for that.
Yeah, and Washington State, we talked about their game against Oregon State. This week, they are taking on Nevada. So this is their final non-conference game. This is at 3 p.m. in Pullman. Nevada coming to town against Washington State. Nevada is trash, like trash garbage. Washington State is favored by 27.5. Nevada lost to Idaho State last weekend.
I heard they're not good either.
Yeah, they're not good. They lost to Toledo the week before and Northwestern the week before that. They are not good. But Washington State is really weird. Like, they're just you never really know what to expect, and 27.5 points feels like so many. So this game is on the Pac-12 Network, by the way. I just never know what to expect against out of Washington State. I don't know exactly, like, Nevada hasn't given up a ton of points. Like, each one of their games has been, like, losing 31-20, 37-24, 30-28. I just don't think they're playing at the pace where they're going to give up just mounds and mounds of points. Their defense might be a little okay. Full disclosure, I have not watched a minute of a Nevada game this year. But 27.5 feels like a lot. I don't think it's a letdown spot, but it is kind of a look ahead spot for Washington State, to use the parlance of the solid verbal, because USC is coming to town next, I think, Friday night. So for all those reasons, I'm going to take Nevada just because the 27.5 feels like a lot. I think Washington State's going to win by 3 touchdowns, but I just don't know that they're going to completely blow them away the way that line would indicate.
Wow. Okay. I'm taking Washington State in this one. If you look at their schedule, let's pull that up right real quick. Montana State and Oregon State. Would Nevada be better than either one of those teams?
Probably better than Montana State.
Okay.
But they did just lose to Idaho State, so.
It's close. Yeah, I don't know. And Washington State beat both of those teams by more than 28 points. So
I hear what you're saying.
You hear my logic?
I get it.
Now, I don't need to convince you since you're ahead in the standings this year, but.
No.
I'm going to, you know, Falk got back on track. That was a weird, the Boise State thing was all weird and stuff. Yeah, I think he's back. He threw 6 touchdowns again. It's the Luke Falk we thought. He's going to set all kinds of records and stuff. So I'm going to roll with Washington State in their 4th home game in a row, rolling over a bad Nevada team. So I'll take Washington State giving up the 27.5.
Okay.
All right. We're up to our top 2. Our number 2 team is
Washington Huskies.
And this was such a fun game. And it wasn't. It was horrible. It was an awful game to watch. But Washington only won by 32 points, so I won this bet. Washington beat Fresno State at home 48-16. Fresno State, we can thank them for a late field goal in the 4th quarter for giving me the win here. Washington blew them away in the first half. This game was over really before it started. 27 unanswered points in the first quarter. Jake Browning was really, really sharp, 19 of 22 for four touchdowns. Basically, everybody who threw a ball, Dante Pettis threw a ball. KJ Carter-Samuels came in and threw five completions. So they threw the ball very well against this Fresno State defense. Worryingly, didn't run the ball particularly well. 30 carries for 92 yards. That's just not great. I don't know what it means against a team like this, but it is a little bit of a concern that they haven't run the ball consistently well this year so far. Against Rutgers, they had some struggles as well. So that has to be at least a mild concern at this point. But they, you know, they won the game going away. Can't take too much to complain about there, but that's something I would keep an eye on, just that they have not been great running the ball so far.
Yeah, this is another stupid, like, Chris Peterson should have won by the spread and didn't kind of situations, which just annoys the hell out of me. But whatever. Okay, so I think the offensive line, there's some questions there as far as running the football. And this is a situation where Jake Browning against poor teams looks so good. And sometimes against the better teams just doesn't look as good. But he does look good against the bad teams. I thought he would. He certainly did. Super efficient, only three incompletions. We talked about Pettis getting another punt return for a touchdown. So he's tied the NCAA career mark for punt return touchdowns. I think the pass rush, Dave, maybe a little bit of a concern too, if you're looking on the defensive side of the ball. So it's not like, there's some flaws, but this team's looking good. How much do we really know after, playing okay against Rutgers, beating up on Montana and beating Fresno State? I'm not sure. I mean, bigger test, obviously, this weekend, but I don't know. I'm not sure how much I learned from him, but you kind of already knew that Jake Browning against bad teams is going to play really, really well.
Yeah, I mean, against a team that doesn't have a whole lot of athleticism on defense, he's going to look like a god, and he did again. And that was what they needed to do against Fresno State. I just think you've got to be a little bit worried about the run defense, the run offense. So this weekend, Washington is going on the road for their first real test of the year, 7 p.m. on Saturday in Boulder, Washington taking on Colorado. Washington's favored by 10 in this one, which is interesting to me, because, Colorado has some strength in the secondary. I think ideally, you'd want to try to run the ball on Colorado's defense, because they've still got some players in the secondary, even with all the guys they graduated. I think I like Colorado here. Now, I know it's going to come as a big shock to people because I'm, longtime Colorado fan. But, yeah, I think I like Colorado here in the 10. I think, Washington just hasn't really proved anything to me yet. They haven't really shown that they can dominate a good team, frankly, because they haven't played a good team yet. And they've just had too many issues against, two of the bad teams they've played. So, I like Colorado here. I don't like them to win, but I think they'll keep it closer than 10. That just feels like a lot again on the road against a team that looks pretty good to me. They don't look horrible to me. Yeah, they struggled a little bit last week against the Northern Colorado team, but they still beat them by 20. I think these are maybe not similar teams. I think Washington's a little bit better, but I think Colorado's good enough to keep it closer than 10.
Yeah, I'm with you. I was kind of hoping you were going to pick Washington here, but I feel like Colorado's the right side on this one. 10 points is a lot. The Colorado defense is definitely better than we thought. And I think they'll, Browning will probably have a good game, but I don't think he's going to have like a crazy great game. I don't think Pettis can return a touchdown again, a punt for a touchdown again. If he does four games in a row, that would be pretty ridiculous. We'll see. I could see Washington sort of playing down to competition and then they come in this one and just play really well. And if they do, if they like, beat Colorado by the spread. I think that Washington's like, hey, this is a real playoff contender. If you had any questions about them, don't worry about it. This is still a really, really good freaking team. But I just kind of feel like they'll win, but it'll be like a closer sort of affair. I could see them playing really well in Colorado. The offense not looking that good, and maybe the defense plays more like we thought they would be in the beginning of the season, and Washington wins by 17 or 20 or something. I mean, I could see that happening, but I just kind of feel like it's going to be a closer game, Dave. And I don't know which, you know, I think Washington will win, but I think it would have to play like really well, and Colorado not play that, you know, not play very good to win by more than 10. So I'm going to take Colorado in the 10 points here.
Yep. Completely agree.
All right. We'll see on that one. And then see, we got one last team still at number one.
USC Trojans.
It was a very close thing, though.
Yes.
This is a lot of, so this is a weird and fun game at the Coliseum. Texas came down, and much like that other time, this went down to the wire. Did they come to town before? I actually can't remember. Did that happen?
According to Texas, yes. But
did they play in LA once before?
The NCAA told USC they did not. So USC
says
no.
Okay, hold on. We got to shout this out. Ryan, on Twitter last week, with no regard for human life. So Lance Armstrong, so this whole snafu. Let's start at the beginning.
Okay.
USC's notes for the game indicate that USC is 4-0 against Texas all time, with an asterisk saying the Texas win in the BCS championship game was vacated, or the loss was vacated due to NCAA rules, and there was a justification later that Kyle Bonagura, our friend, posted on ESPN.com, and Lance Armstrong quotes Kyle's tweet and says something like, yeah, that's whatever, paraphrasing, that's bullshit, whatever. And Ryan quotes it and said, and says, could you have it from memory?
No, it was something like, no one knows more about vacating wins than, and then.
Oh, God.
Lance Armstrong.
So Ryan murdered Lance Armstrong in the full view of everyone, and it was incredible. Anyway, so USC won this game 27-24 in double overtime. It was really wild and fun. Texas has no offense whatsoever. It is shocking that they managed to score this many points. But in the end, they were up 17-14 with, was it under a minute? I think it was under a minute left. Let's get it just right.
USC got the ball back with 39 seconds left.
Yeah, 39 seconds left. And Sam Darnold drives down the field for the field goal, but to tie the game. But it was Texas 17-14. I thought Texas had won, so I began tweeting, which really I should never do. Texas actually finally put a drive together at the end of the game, which was, you know, guy found his moment. The redshirt freshman quarterback made some big plays on that drive. And they drove it down, but USC was able to come back, tie the game. And then once it got to overtime, I thought the one misstep for me was I thought when Texas scored their touchdown to tie the game or to get it to 24-23 in the first overtime, they should have just gone for two because there was no way they were matching USC touchdown for touchdown offensively.
Yeah.
I thought that was a mistake. I think if that was probably an area where I would have, you know, and I'm not a football coach, but I would have gone for two just to try to end the game right there. But I think the big takeaway from this was actually, I made a note of this on Twitter, but before the Stanford game, Texas's D-line did such a better job against USC's offensive line than Stanford did the previous week that it didn't reflect well on Stanford. But no. I thought Texas's defense did a great job against USC in this game.
Yeah, USC was running the ball at will against Stanford. And then I don't know if they just thought that they were like it was working because they kept trying to do that against Texas. And if you just watch, you know, just watch the replay and then watch Texas defensive linemen be through the USC line and waiting for whoever was carrying the ball for USC. It's like, I don't care what play you're running. You're not going to be able to run the ball that way. And USC, to a fault, just kept trying to do it. Like they felt like they could break one. But the way Texas was moving around on the front, I talked to offensive linemen. They said, yeah, they were doing stuff we didn't see on film, but they didn't really have any adjustments for it. So Texas's defensive line was just manhandling the offensive line that got all kinds of accolades last week for pushing Stanford around. And they got pushed around, by Texas. And it was kind of one of those things where like if you sat down and you had like an hour, Dave, to like eat dinner, but then like you got a phone call and then like it's like a hard hour, like the, you know, everything closes in an hour. And at the last 3 minutes, you like tried to eat your whole meal. Like that was like this whole game. Like nothing was going on for long stretches. And then at the end in crunch time, then everything would happen at the, you know, three touchdowns got scored at the end of the first half. And, you know, USC like probably should have took a knee. And, you know, they had their ball in like their own 30 or something.
Right.
And they don't. And then Sam Darnold throws a pick six. And then they get the ball back and you're like, okay, it's going to be tied. Like, this is weird. Like, Texas couldn't move the ball at all and they're tied going into the half. And Sam Darnold, like, basically throws a check down on a Hail Mary that goes to Ronald Jones. And then he runs away, gets a huge block from Steven Mitchell, de-cleats a guy. And then he runs all the way to the corner of the end zone and scores a touchdown. So the game was kind of drunk, I thought. And most everything happened at the very, very end of the halves.
Yeah, and it was kind of what we expected. We thought Tom Herman would have the team up for this, and I think he had his defense way up for this. And I think getting that kind of play from his redshirt freshman backup quarterback was also, I mean, that guy shouldn't have been playing that well against a good and talented USC defense. But he played pretty well. I mean, he wasn't gonna, you know, he wasn't gonna single-handedly do it, but he almost did. And Texas couldn't run the ball either, so it was a lot on his shoulders, but he went kind of toe to toe with USC for a while, so you got to give him credit. But defensively, they came to play in a big way, came within inches of winning this game. But USC, I mean, in a full gut check moment, Sam Darnold led him down the field for that field goal, and then just crushed it in OT. So kind of a fun, interesting game. You know, brought up some potential flaws with USC. You know, running the ball against, I mean, I think Texas has some obvious talent on the defensive line, some obvious guys who are going to be big time players. So I don't know that it's like necessarily something you're going to see a ton of in the Pac-12, but Utah's got a tough defensive front. And you know, it's going to be interesting to see how they do against maybe some of the tougher defensive lines. They're going to be matched up against, but, I thought it was a good win, a gut check win. You know, it's not a lot of times when you only beat a team by three, when you were favored by whatever it was, 14 or 15, it's a disappointing win. But I thought Texas was clearly playing with a lot more fire than they had previous to this game. USC took their best chance and still beat them. So I think you got to take something from that.
A couple weird things. Neither of these teams had made a field goal yet in this, you know, in the whole season. USC, you know, lost their kicker from the Rose Bowl to a Title IX thing, had a scholarship kicker who blew out his knee, who had lost the job anyway, but blew out his knee against Stanford, so he's out. So they had a true freshman walk-on kicker who never kicked a field goal, missed one badly early. And then Darnold has that, you know, 39-second drive, puts him in field goal range, and Chase McGrath hits it, hits the field goal to tie it. And then he had to hit one in double overtime to win it, and he hit both. So that's kind of improbable, having like a freshman kicker.
Yeah.
Like probably the two biggest kicks of his whole life, or his first two kicks he's ever made. Like, I don't know if he'll ever kick that big again. And then you mentioned, like, Tom Herman had this team up for it. Tom Herman has never lost to a ranked team in his head coaching career.
Yeah.
He would beat the Oklahomas of the world and then lose to, you know, a bad team. One thing about college football is if you, like, you know, everyone says one game at a time and all that, that's all bull, right? Like, if you want to, you know, like, Rich, I said about Rich Rod, like, Rich Rod got them up for UTEP. Like, he, whatever reason, like, this was a, like, he wanted this team to play well against UTEP. USC, I think, did that against Stanford. Like, that's the game they circled. And Tom Herman definitely circled this game for Texas and gave them everything they had. And they, you know, easily could have won this game, obviously. But that's, I think that with the emotion, the way you can prepare in college football, you can do that. Like, you can put emphasis on, in my opinion, you can put emphasis on one game over another. And maybe they overlooked Maryland in the first game, and they ended up losing, you know, like they could have won that one and close or something. They ended up losing that one, but they were so focused on this USC game. So I kind of have that theory. I don't know what you feel, Dave, but.
Yeah, I think there's definitely something to that. Getting guys up emotionally for every single game on a schedule is unrealistic. And I think, you know, we said that going into this one. This was one that Herman was going to have circled.
Yes.
And I think that was obvious from the way they played. So USC now goes on the road for a game that Cal probably has circled. 12:30 p.m. on ABC, going against Cal. USC is favored by 16.5, which seems... I don't want to say it seems crazy to me, because we said that about one USC line this year, and then they beat Stanford by a whole lot. But it does seem a little bit crazy to me, given what we've seen of Cal, given some of the, you know, not flaws we've seen in USC, but we've got to kind of reevaluate what we've seen from USC now, because they kind of struggled a little bit against Western Michigan, then beat Stanford by 18, but that Stanford team is turning out to be maybe not super elite, and then they beat Texas by 3 in double overtime at home. I guess what I'm saying is, I mean, it just, Cal has looked pretty decent so far this year. 16.5 feels like a lot. I think their defense might be able to harass Sam Darnold quite a bit. I don't think they're going to cause him to do what Shea Patterson did, which was throw a whole bunch of picks under pressure and, you know, run away and all that kind of stuff. But I think they're going to be able to harass him. I like Cal here. I'm going to take him plus 16.5. I don't like him to win, but I think it'll be a closer game than, you know, 17 points. That seems just like a lot to me.
Yeah, I'm with you on this one. And for like people kind of like they email me or tweet me. Yes, I've picked against USC in every single week, but I'm 2-1. Like, this is against the spread. Like, I felt USC would win all those games, but I didn't feel they'd cover the spread. They covered against Stanford, not the other two. This is another one of those games where this is the first road test. USC's pretty banged up on the defensive side of the ball. It's a lot of points. I mean, the spread for Texas, like, USC didn't even score that many points, you know, in regulation. So it was like, it was kind of crazy. This is a lot of points on the road, a Cal team that looks better. Now, could USC put it all together and just like boat race Cal? Yes. Like, certainly could see that. Haven't really seen, you know, all indications pointing that that's going to happen. I wouldn't be surprised, but at this point, you're talking about a 3-score spread again. It's like, I got to take the points here. So it's not like, I'm not trying to be contrarian. I'm not trying to just, USC doesn't do as well covering the spread when they're a big favorite. They just haven't, historically either. So, I think Sam Darnold finds ways to win. And when they're not playing all that great, he can do that. And you beat Texas in the end where most other quarterbacks wouldn't have been able to do that. But, you know, we haven't seen this team just kind of put it together and play amazing football and play to their potential, except that one Stanford game. And we don't really even know how good Stanford is. So I'll take 16.5 points in Cal.
Yeah, for sure. All right, you want to get some questions?
Yeah.
All right, this one's from Otis. Hi, Ryan and David. In all the games you both have watched, what year team would be the worst USC and UCLA football team of all time? Okay. In all the years I've watched personally, I'm just going to limit it to like the last 15 years then, because my 90s recollections are fuzzy at best. Most unwatchable? Man, I almost might go last year. Watching that UCLA team try to struggle through the end of the season with such a horrible offense and then finishing 4-8, that was pitiful. So yeah, I'll go last year. That's fine.
Last year is the one you would,
Yeah.
Okay. Let's see. Let me look. The 2000 football team, USC was 5-7. They were 2-6 in conference and, they finished last. I think it was the first time ever. It was pretty bad. So,
yeah.
Our buddy Petros was the captain of that team and he always calls it like the worst team in USC football history because they did finish, you know, they tied with Cal and Washington State that year, the bottom of the conference. So yeah, I think I would go with that one. There was a 3-8 season under Larry Smith. God, what year was that? It was like 92 or 93 or something. When I was like, I want to date myself, but I was like a senior. Yeah. I was still in school, or maybe it was just soon after I was in school, something like that. 94. I don't know what it was. That was pretty bad, but this one actually finished last in the Pac-12. So I'll go 2000.
All right. And then, Earl in West LA has questions for David Woods. One, did you really move to Atlanta? Yes. Two, how is the UCLA fan base taking Jim Mora's failure to surpass USC? Not particularly well. At least from my look at the UCLA fan base, from my perspective, but, I think a lot of people are starting to, I don't think he's, I don't know. It's hard to gauge hot seat stuff at the beginning of a year, but I think there's certainly some unhappy folks in the fan base. Three, will UCLA break the Stanford stranglehold this year? I'm not predicting them to. That's it for Earl.
Yeah.
We
had a couple of tweets if you want me to read them. Or,
Yeah. Skip to a tweet.
So Rob CUCI, he tweeted early before the weekend, both in on Texas, huh? And then you tweeted, I tend to pick with hate in my heart.
Well, you tweeted, I, Ryan, tend to pick against USC. And I tweeted in response to that, I, Dave, tend to pick with hate in my heart.
Yeah. So that was kind of good. So, and I told him, I said, I think USC wins, but I thought more like 10 points. So he said he could easily see USC's linebackers in the Texas backfield on 40% of the plays. It was kind of the opposite. It was Texas's, defensive line and linebackers were in there. Nick_Dvorak, D-V-O-R-A-K, he put in using the lock emoji, UCLA -3, lock of the week /century. No.
That did not prove to be accurate.
That wasn't the thing. John Louis, at John Louis, L-U-I, has David Woods, that's you, really moved to Atlanta? David answered that. He said yes. Had it something to do with an arrest warrant, and you said that you had shot a man in Reno just to watch him die, because that's more acceptable in the South. So I thought that was funny. He wanted to know if you were still working on Bro, and you are. And then we had one from R-O-T-N-E-S, at R-O-T-N-E-S. The conference looks like garbage at the moment. Will Larry Scott acknowledge that the revenue gap and talent gap are starting to line up? So he wanted to know about that. He didn't like the way the conference looked.
Okay. Seems fine.
Do we want to respond to that or no?
No, I don't think it is. I think it's just, we don't even know yet if it's a down year. Like, we don't know how good Oregon's going to end up being. We don't know how good, like, even Cal's going to end up being. Maybe it's just a slight changing of the guard. I don't think so. I think Stanford, you know, losing to San Diego State's not great, but Cal beating Ole Miss at home and what's turning out to be a volatile at best UCLA team beating Texas A&M at home, I think both of those are good wins. USC beating Texas is a good win. I it's hard to say if the conference is even down at this point. We might be at the end of the year and suddenly Oregon's 11-1, you know, and Washington's 11-1 and USC wins the conference at 12-0. And then we're like, oh wow, there's three super elite teams in the Pac-12. You know, you just don't, we're three games in. Let's pump the brakes on calling anything down or bad at this point.
Yeah. We've got some really good, we always harp on that. You want the big out of conference wins and, the Pac-12 got some of those. One last one, at Snow Coug, S-N-O-C-O-U-G, responded to, Rotness or whatever the heck you say his name. He said, if that's the case, why are the Cougs winning? So he responded to that tweet that we got. I mean, I would say the Cougs are winning because they played Montana State and Oregon State and had a miracle against Boise State, but I don't think that has anything to do with the revenue thing. But yeah, like I said, I mean, and the Boise State win's a good win for the conference too. Boise State beats Pac-12 teams all the time. So, that's a good one also. The Cougs are winning. Snow Coug. That's good.
And we had a question that we didn't get to from our last podcast that I wanted to get to on the Twitter. Brady asks, who is the most capable backup quarterback in the Pac-12? Who can afford to go too deep? Who must avoid QB injury the most? It's hard to know because so many of these teams, we haven't seen their backup quarterbacks. Like, we've seen a lot of Troy Williams, but I don't feel he's all that capable. But you could probably throw him in the mix here. I think I like Blake Barnett. Mostly because of what I saw out of him in high school. But, you know, I think him at ASU, I think Troy Williams at Utah. KJ Carter Samuels, maybe at Washington. What we saw out of, what's his face? Washington State. It was one of the brothers. What's his name?
Oh, yeah. Shoot. Yeah, no, he came in and played pretty well.
Helinski
played well.
Yeah, he came in and looked competent. So I think it's some combination of those four guys. I don't think UCLA has a super competent one at this point. Devon Monster is still a little ways away. USC?
No.
No.
KJ Costello? Is he I don't even know if he's a backup though.
I don't even know if he is. It might be Davis Mills. And before them even, it's Ryan Burns. So, Stanford's depth chart, I think I would take.
Yeah.
But I don't know if you'd allow me that, because they've got some great guys waiting in the wings. And Oregon, I don't know enough about. I think it's still like Taylor Lockie. So I don't know about that. And Oregon State's, you know, Daryl Gerritsen has some starting experience, but, I don't think anything's very good up there.
We had a question on email from, who was it? From Ernesto in Temecula. He wanted to know if the Pac-12 podcast, the Podcast of Champions, was on Google Play. I thought it was. And it turned out it was not. So I put it in, or I put the request in to add it this morning. So, I got help from the Audio Boom guys and they showed me what to do. So, if it's not on Google Play now, it will be very soon.
Cool. And then, Second Street asks, hey, David. So, this is about UCLA season. So our defense sucks, but Rosen could probably start for 5 NFL teams tomorrow. He is truly special. Do you think we will TAMU enough teams, which means come back or win a 40-point shootout by one, to save Mora's job, or is 4-8 a foregone conclusion, since my 9-year-old niece could rush for 200 yards against our defense? I don't think 4-8 is a foregone conclusion. What I do think is that the volatility for this team makes it so that 4-8, and I think even, I mean, I'm not, I don't think they're going to go 3-9, but I think a lot of different results are on the table now, because this offense is good enough to keep them in tons of games. I think maybe 2 or 3 losses I'd feel pretty sure about at this point, but I think everything else is winnable. But I also think this defense is bad enough that it's gonna force their offense to keep them in a ton of games. The defense is very bad. I don't know if your 9-year-old niece could rush for 200 yards, but maybe in 4 years when she's 13, you know, fully grown, she could probably do it. So yeah, that's a tricky one. I think if you were asking me to peg the record right now at this juncture, I think I before the season, I was on the like 7-5, 8-4-ish train. I'm probably now more on the 6-6 to 7-5 train, but it wouldn't take much more. Like if Stanford goes really south, I'll start to look at, you know, what math it takes to get to 6-6. But right now I think they're still probably on track for a bowl game, but it's a little dicey now. And I think it's just a very volatile team. I think, you know, if Rosen gets just super hot for a 6-game stretch, they could beat a lot of different teams, but, that defense is so bad. Just so bad. Let's see what else we have. Oh, we've got Nick's rundown. You want me to do this real quick?
Sure. Yeah, go ahead.
All right. Quick rundown and question. Hi, this is Nick from Cyprus, aka Big Nick 21 USC from the P. Arizona 63 versus UTEP 16. Bear down after a 7-hour bus ride, no flight by Arizona to save money. LOL. UTEP is next to Fort Bliss, Texas. I feel bad for those kids. No longer ranked 25, ugly, UCLA. I think he misspelled that one.
Yeah.
45 versus Memphis 48, no defense. Great offense on both sides, but another Bruin revolution that's over before it started. It's all just been one revolution, and it was over like 2 years ago. Northern Colorado 21 versus Colorado 41. Simple. Colorado 1 and 1 big. The worst team in the conference 23. That'll be you, Oregon State, versus Washington State 52. Can you say spanking? Yeah, spanking. Washington State Mike Leach has done a lot in the Palouse. Should be the number 3 in the conference. Can we vote Oregon State out of this conference? Oregon 49 versus Wyoming 13. Big win by Oregon. Oregon plays D. Never knew that. LOL. Josh Allen isn't better than Rosen or Darnold. Correct. ASU 45 versus Texas Tech 52. Wow, I never want to see a coach get fired, but that seat's getting red hot for Todd Graham. Does Graham make it to October as the head coach? I think he makes it to October. I don't think he makes it to November. Texas 24, USC 27. I was at the game and it was scary, fun, sad, happy, etc. Emotional win by USC to beat Texas. Sam Darnold is the best player in the country who has thrown 6 interceptions this year already. That was my commentary there at the end. Fresno State 16 versus Washington 48. Pettis is a great special teams weapon. UW wins big. San Diego State 16, Utah 54. Utah wins, and QB Huntley is special with that talented, well-coached Utah D. Can't wait for that Utah versus USC game. Ole Miss versus Cal. So are Ryan and David Woods eating crow on Justin Wilcox? 3-0. The D made plays, offensive enough to win versus an SEC team. Cal versus USC will be fun to watch, which I'll be there. Cal better be a top five team in your Pac-12 rankings. Were they? I think they were. Stanford 17, San Diego State 20. Who will have more Pac-12 wins than Oregon State will have total? Oh, San Diego State, which will have more Pac-12 wins than Oregon State will have total. Got it. Rashad Penny is a beast. How did the Pac-12 miss on this kid? Penny is a beast. Stanford, well, makes the Pac-12 look bad. Quick questions. One, Ryan and David, if you were ADs, when do you pull the plug on Todd Graham and Gary Anderson as your coach if you were ADs? I don't mind the midseason firing. I know it's unpopular, but I don't mind it. I think it kind of clears the air a little bit. It can allow your team to maybe rebound a little bit with no – and it allows your fan base to, like, just – so a lot of fans fall into this. I'm known to do it in my time as well, where you start rooting for the team to lose because you want the coach fired. When you fire the coach midseason, it allows the fans to just kind of, okay, frees them up to root for the team again. And it also frees up the players to not feel like all that pressure's on them to save their coach's job. They can just go out and play. You'll see a lot of teams rebound when they fire the coach midseason. If it's a done deal, just do it. It puts everyone out of their misery. It lets the coach move on, try to find a new job before the start of the next season. It lets you start your coaching search in back channels. Like, it lets you do a lot of things without feeling like you're going behind someone's back. Just fire them if you're going to fire them. I think Todd Graham deserves to be fired. Soon. Gary Anderson, I think you obviously give him more time because Oregon State was a massive rebuild. Your thoughts?
I agree there. You know, unless Todd Graham can get things rolling. And like I said, like, it looked like they were close, but this is not the time to be close. This was the time to be, you know, you've already lost some games now you probably shouldn't have. And, it's going to get a lot tougher. You'd have to get a lot better to win these games. So I do think, like, sometimes, you know, late October, they'll probably be the last we see of Todd Graham in the conference. And for Gary Anderson, I mean, it just felt like this was going to be a year where they take a big step forward. Obviously that hasn't happened. It's not over. Yeah. Maybe they turn things around, but this is not I can't see anything happening early just because they're bad right now. They've just been bad for a while. It's just discouraging because you felt like they were going in the right direction. We thought they were going in the right direction. It doesn't look like, they are. So I think he's still going to have another chance to kind of make some adjustments and write things. But if, you know, it'll be the same sort of thing, I think, next year. If they suck the rest of this year and then they suck the beginning of next year, then that could something that happens. I don't know if Oregon State would fire him midseason. They might wait. My guess would be if he stinks this year and then next year, he'll get fired after the season. But, you know, we'll see.
Yeah. And then number two, how shocked are you, Ryan and David Woods, how good Cal and WSU are, Washington State? I noticed they don't get any love from you guys the last few seasons. That's not true.
No,
we made a lot of jokes about Cal going 10-2 2 years ago. We've given them a ton of mock love. No, I mean, Cal, we were expecting them to be very bad, and they are not. They are clearly decent at least. And they might be trending towards above average to good. So that's great. And, Washington State, it was more a function of somebody had to lose some games. That's why I predicted, I think I had them like 6-6 or something crazy.
Yeah. And, you had them way worse than I did, so.
Yeah, you kind of got to go a little out there with one pick just because, you know, somebody's going to fall apart and who's going to be. But, no, there's every reason to think Washington State's the exact same team as they were last year or the year before, you know, a team that's going to win 8 or 9 games and do a lot of nice things. So not surprised, really.
Yeah, I think
by Washington State, more by Cal.
Yeah, I think the same thing with Cal. And I think, you know, I wasn't a big fan of Justin Wilcox's, at least what I saw at USC. But I think he's done a great job with the hires. It looks like he's letting the coordinators run things. You're not really sure if you're a defensive coach. Are you really the defensive coordinator? I think Tim DeRuiter is the defensive coordinator. I forget the guy's name. They brought the guy from Eastern Washington as the offensive coordinator, the head coach there. So like two head coaches as your coordinators. I think that's important for a young head coach, and they're playing pretty well. So that's good. Now, I thought Washington State would even be better than what they are right now. Like I didn't think they would lose any of these games so far. I thought they would be really good. They just haven't looked as good as I thought they were going to look. They haven't been able to run the football as much as I thought. They got a good stable of running backs. So we'll see. I mean, they can still get it rolling. You know, it's one thing when you win and you don't look as good as you would think, and you have to come back, you know, some crazy comeback against Boise State, but you still got the win. So last couple of years, they would win a whole bunch of games after losing early on. So at least now they've won. But they're actually, I don't think they look as good as I thought they were going to look. I thought they were going to be good this year.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay.
Then we've got another one. True or false? This is from Zach. Hey, Ryan and Dave, I'm going to throw out a few statements. Let me know if they're true or false. Okay, let's go. One. All right, so he's spelling Jim Mora, G-Y-M, Mora, which
that's interesting. Maybe it's spell check or like a...
No, it's intentional because it's every single time here, which I don't know. Is that a reference to... Well, we'll see. All right. Okay. Jim Mora's clock management ability is worse than the average person that's played Madden like twice. True or false?
No, I would say false. What do you say?
I'm going to say false just because he said like twice. I would say like the average person who's like played Madden like a bit, like quite a bit. Okay. Like if you played Madden like enough that you're like decent at it, then you might be better at it.
Okay.
But like twice, come on, it's just disrespectful. Two, if football didn't exist, the ceiling on Jim Mora's earning potential would be gym teacher. Come on, this is just mean, but that's where the gym thing comes from.
Oh, gotcha, okay.
All right, so are we going true or false there?
If football didn't exist, no, I'd say false.
Yeah, he's a good-looking guy. I think he'd get something done. Yeah, I'm going to go false there.
He'd be like three. A hand model, like a thing, you know?
You know, he's got like a little bit of politician to him, especially his first few years. I think he would have been successful doing something else. Three, Stanford is secretly kind of stinky.
Reluctantly true.
Yeah, slightly true. Slightly true. Yeah. But that could change. They could wipe that stink off them by the end of the year. Four, Todd Graham will be unemployed by Halloween. True.
True.
Five, Chip Kelly will be coaching in the Pac-12 next year.
True. Arizona State.
False. He'll be at Tennessee or Florida.
Ooh, you think he'll go SEC?
I think he'll go SEC.
You want to talk about bad clock management? Like, my wife, you know, is a big Tennessee fan.
No, don't bring that hate in here. We don't need to stink this up with Tennessee talk.
Oh, my God. I just flipped to the end, and I didn't even realize when Florida threw that Hail Mary at the end, they blew the clock themselves. Like, they had timeouts.
Those teams are just clusters.
It was like, how did Florida win that game? They did not deserve – they just butchered – they were getting booed.
No one deserved to win that game, Ryan. It deserved to end in a tie.
They got booed before they threw the Hail Mary touchdown because the clock management was so bad.
That game should have ended -1-1.
Sorry. I didn't mean to, if you want to talk about bad clock management, there you go.
Horrible game to watch. Never bring it up here again on this podcast. Six, Jim Mora will not beat USC again. Oh, and he says, just to get back at Nick, it's $SUC again, but I translated that to USC just internally.
So wait, Zach is he's a Bruin fan.
Pretty clearly a Bruin fan, but he's just a self-loathing one.
But he hates Jim. Okay, so because he hates USC, but he hates Jim Mora.
He's probably one of those who's in firm rooting for UCLA to lose mode.
Okay.
Yeah, that's my guess here.
That's actually a good, like, as much hate as he's, you know. I think that's actually an interesting question. I'm going to say true.
I will say true as well. I don't think there's going to be more than a couple more opportunities. And I think USC is just going to be better. Seven, Oregon hasn't really played anyone yet. True-ish. I'm going to give it true, but I think what they've done to those teams has been impressive.
I'll go false. I think Nebraska is a team. I mean, they're a team.
They lost to Northern Illinois.
Okay. No, but still, they're Nebraska. Like,
they have a name. Yes, they have a name of a state on their helmets.
The N stands for knowledge. I was always told.
Obviously.
Okay, but it's still like a blue blood program. You've got a first year head coach. Like, it's even if Nebraska is like garbage. Like, when you walk in and you have that. You're Nebraska. It's still Nebraska. So I think that's a good win. Like, I think that's a good conference win.
Yeah. Okay. And eight, Bruining should replace Clemsoning as the saying for teams that lose games they should win.
I'll go, I'm going to say false just because, I mean, UCLA had, like, it's hard to, when UCLA had one of the greatest comebacks, like, ever, you know?
Yeah.
And, like, it's hard to say you're Bruining or Clemsoning or whatever. Like, when you had that, like, you went the complete opposite of that. Like, you played a team that Clemson.
I'm a long time, much more negative person about UCLA than this person or anybody. And Bruining is like game by game. And if you don't understand by this point in your UCLA fandom that UCLA's issues are systemic and not game by game, then, I mean, you're just not getting it. So, no, it shouldn't replace Clemsoning because UCLA's entire ethos is underperforming relative to its talent. That's what UCLA does. And maybe it'll stop doing that at some point, but that's just how it is. And so it's not game by game. It's not losing games that you should win. It's massively underperforming over decades upon decades of football. Relative to your talent base. So there you go. And then he ends with this one.
Oh, okay.
This is a fun fact, not a true or false. UCLA has lost the last four games they have played as a ranked team to unranked opponents. This stat is so Jim Mora, it hurts.
That's not good. Yeah. I didn't know that one.
That's not good.
No.
All right. We've got one more.
Is it Anthony one? You want me to read it?
Yeah.
Or?
You want to read it? You want to go?
This is hard because, like, you know, we don't have every coordinator off the tip of our tongue, but Ryan and Dave, who have been the three most impressive Pac-12 coordinators, and which three would you put on the hot seat? I mean, I think Jim Leavitt's got to be up there, right? Like
Jim Leavitt, Tim DeRuyter, and I'd go Troy Taylor with Utah.
Yes. They've recycled. What about Jed Fish, though, too?
He's been good, but I think UCLA's still got some slight issues running the ball. So I think he's in the conversation, but I'd put those three ahead just because where they were coming from, Cal's defense, Oregon's defense, and Utah's offense, I think the way those units have played has been more impressive. I think everyone was expecting UCLA's offense to take a little bit of a step up now that Rosen was back.
Yeah. Okay.
Hot seat, which guys. Three would you put on the hot seat? I'm not going to put anybody in a hot seat, but guys who are struggling –
I'm going to go.
UCLA's defense is garbage, so Bradley.
I'm going to do Troy Taylor at Utah because they get rid of theirs every year, so I just assume he was going to be gone. Even though he was like one of our most impressive, he's going to be fired.
I think that's fair, completely understandable.
Sorry.
Whoever ASU's defensive coordinator is probably going to leave with Graham when he's fired in a month and a half.
Probably someone at Oregon State.
I don't know enough about sides of the ball that are doing that poorly right now.
Yeah.
I doubt Stanford's ever in a position where they're going to fire anybody. There's just too much stability there. So I don't know about that.
Yeah. Let's see. Which three players outside the Pac-12 would you want to see play in the Pac-12? For example, Lamar Jackson at Oregon. Oh, that would be kind of fun. Saquon Barkley at Stanford. That would be good too. I wanted to see, like, I thought Shea Patterson, I wanted to see him go to USC. I thought he'd be really good, there. That was one guy. Let's see, who else? Anyone come to your head?
Those are two really good ones, Lamar Jackson and Saquon Barkley. Seeing Saquon Barkley, a guy as fast as that at Stanford, would not be fair.
One of those big, SEC defensive linemen playing at Utah.
Yeah, like get me a CC Jefferson somewhere in the Pac-12 or any of those defensive tackles, like literally for any of those teams.
Right.
It'd be fun.
On any Pac-12 team, but like at Utah or something, it'd be good. Well,
oh, God. Yeah.
They kind of rotate dudes. Like you need them where they're just like at Stanford. They would be like, they would never come off the field, you know, so they would just be like, they would just be like a piece of a machine at Utah, right? Like that's the way they do it, you know?
Yeah. They would be playing like their 40 snaps, but they'd be playing 40 hard snaps.
Yeah.
All right. Well, good.
Good stuff. Do we have any other questions? I think we're good.
No, we're done. We are tapped out. We've gone nearly 2 hours. It's great.
Yeah. Your kids are probably ripping the house to shreds.
Yeah.
They're
going to kill them.
Nice.
As they usually do.
And I don't know. And since you're in Atlanta, it's probably, what is it, Wednesday there? Or what? I'm not sure. I don't know how this time
is. It's like something in Australia. It's like 36 hours ago or something. I don't know. Somebody will have to send us another lesson on how to tell time.
Let us know. But yeah, check on Google Play. So if you like your podcast on Google Play, I do apologize. I thought we were there already. But our number's been up. So we do appreciate you listening and listening to all our banter and my bad picks and Dave's surprisingly good picks for 1 week. So I don't know. It's been a while since you beat me, Dave. And then when you beat me, you crushed me. So
it crushed the life out of you.
Crushing. All right. That's David Woods. I am Ryan Abraham. This is the Podcast of Champions. Thank you so much for tuning in, and we will talk to you next time.